Hi there. Good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you are living on this planet. Right here, it's morning. Where I live back home, it's probably evening. So, hi, home front. Thanks for staying awake and watching this session. I'm going to talk about Windows Azure websites, but not the typical 101 talk you see at a lot of conferences. I'm going to try and take the route of the things you don't learn at school. The really cool things that help you understand the platform and how you can get creative with everything that's in there, and there's really a lot in there. Before we start, I just want to quickly show you and tell you about the Global Windows Azure Bootcamp we are running. Actually started with a couple of the other MVPs in Windows Azure to think about this conference, and our main target was to have like 10 locations around the globe. Currently, we have 100 locations around the globe. So, if you are looking for good resources on Azure, you want to learn Azure, next week, Saturday, April 27th, there's a ton of locations out there. Go to our website and please subscribe. That being said, I'll give you a quick introduction about myself. I'm Maarten Baljouw. I live in Belgium, so it's quite a long flight to Redmond. I'm a technical evangelist with JetBrains. Which basically means I do things like this, talk about stuff. I am one of the co-founders of the Azure User Group in Belgium, which is also holding a Global Windows Azure Bootcamp there locally. And my main focus has been and will probably always be everything related to web. So ASP.NET MVC, ASP.NET, well, not web forms, but SignalR, Windows Azure, everything related to web in the broad sense of the word. But my big passion really is Windows Azure, and that's why I'm here. You can find my blog as well. I try to blog about all these topics quite regularly there. And you can follow me on Twitter as well. So feel free to go there and see whatever I have to say. Sometimes it may be useful, sometimes not. Also, if you want to buy me a beer, you can come over and buy me a beer here. But I've also written a book on NuGet. And feel free to just go there and make sure I have a beer whenever they pay royalties. So the agenda for today, I'll first give you a real quick overview of Windows Azure. So a quick 101 on what you can do with the platform there. Then we'll talk a bit about the architecture of Windows Azure websites. Quite a disclaimer there, I'm not sure how it all works, but taking in all the clues from the different conferences that have been around, taking in clues from all the open source projects Microsoft has running, I think I came up with a good approach to what the architecture looks like currently. Then I'll talk about Project Kudu, which is the open source engine behind Windows Azure websites, and then we'll go nuts and do some kung fu with Kudu. So, Windows Azure websites. By the way, before we start, I see that I have a question on when Windows Azure websites will support SSL. If you look back at the keynote Scott Guthrie did, he said like soonish, so I'm not sure about the date, but it will come apparently, so it's on the roadmap. So, let's dive into Windows Azure websites right now. This is the main marketing message, but the idea is you can start simple. You can just go to the portal. You can create your own free website. You can scale it to a shared instance. You can scale it to a reserved instance where you have a complete web server that you can use for your website. You can have it your way. You can write in PHP. You can write in ASP.NET. You can do Node.js. You can develop on Windows, Linux, or macOS, or whatever you want to do. And it's really easy to go live there. So you can just create a new website in a portal, deploy your website there, or select a website from the gallery, and you are live, and you will enjoy what you can do with Windows Azure websites. I'm going to give you a quick demo about this, and we'll have a look at how Windows Azure websites works. So if I go to the portal, you will see that under websites, I have quite a couple of websites there, some personal, but also for the demos in this talk, and I'll just create a new website. So I can select a quick create option where I can simply specify the host name I want to use and where I can get started with this entire website. But in this demo, I'll just create a new website from the gallery. And you will find a list of applications that you can install. So for example, if you want to start a blog, you can simply select a blog category. And once everything loads, you can just select the type of blog engine you want to host, or select the framework you want to host, and a website will be created. Not going into that one because that's really the 101 talking, and I promised you I would go deep into the platform. So let's do that. Gonna zoom in there. Enough of the sharks. So I'm going to first talk about the architecture of Windows Azure websites so you understand where your application is running, what you can do with it, and why things are behaving like they are behaving on the platform. But before we start with that, again, my big disclaimer, I'm not saying any of this information is correct. It's just like all the clues that I find on the internet and all the clues I find browsing the platform, testing stuff and watching the environment. It's just what I think Windows Azure websites is built like and will probably be close to that. But again, it's just, not reality, possibly. If you look at Windows Azure websites, you will see that there's different layers of load balancing involved. So since Windows Azure websites is hosted on the Windows Azure platform as a service platform, so it's just web roles and worker roles there, they have the Windows Azure load balancer in front of everything you deploy there. So what you will have is if a request comes in, it will hit the load balancer on Windows Azure. And from there on, it will just round robin randomly select one of the IIS application request routing servers that are sitting in the back. So IIS application request routing, if you don't know this, it's a reverse proxy kind of service you can install into IIS servers and that you can use to proxy servers to a backend server. So if a request comes in, it will hit the reverse proxy and that one will go back to the sites that are behind. So application request routing, or as you will find it on the internet, like a pirate R. It's a reverse proxy, like I said, and you will have, that proxy is a custom version of the proxy you can use on your own platform as well. And it checks all the plans that are available, it checks your quota. It will make sure that whenever a request comes in, it's actually allowed to be responded to with a response there. So it will check the hosting database, make sure your quota are okay, and it will also select a node to run on. So what happens is if a request comes in, the website you have deployed on Windows Azure websites is not really on a backend server. It's not already on an IIS server sitting in the back. No, it's just storage. And whenever the first request comes in, application request routing or this custom version of that one, we'll check the hosting database, see if you are on free, shared or reserved. And then we'll select one of the servers in the back and set up the reverse proxy so all the requests can flow through the entire system to the server where your website is hosted. When the site is not used too much, you will see that the website is being killed. And again, the storage remains, so your website still remains and it's on the storage machine. But you will see that the IIS machine has no provisioned version of your website in there. All the web servers have been built, it's just standard IIS, but what you see is whenever you deploy an IIS server on-premise or in a data center somewhere, you will see that whenever you create a new website in there or you configure an application pool or you add something there, all that information is being written into the application host config, which sits on your system. If you go to the path you see on the slide, you will find this file and you will see the configuration of all the websites in there. On Windows Azure websites, of course, the last thing you want to do is use this file, because whenever you make a change to this file, all the application pools will recycle and all the websites have to restart in order to work again. So what the Windows Azure team, websites team did, is they've taken that file out of the loop and are storing all the configuration details in SQL Azure. And they are not refreshing all the application pools out there, but they're just refreshing the one in which your website is running. Talking about storage, whenever you deploy a website, whenever you upload files to Windows Azure websites, you will find that your website is stored on a central location, like a file server in a traditional network. And that file share is hosted on some other machine, and it's basically just relaying a virtual disk which is sitting on blob storage. So if you know the Windows Azure drives that are available, the large virtual hard disk blobs that you can put on blob storage, well, that's what the website's team is using. And they just added one server in front of it so they can access that one disk from multiple servers and use file sharing and really have a network attached storage thing sitting in there. Now, on every web server, there's also a dynamic web activation service. So whenever that first request comes in, application request routing will make sure that your website is being provisioned and that the server is being selected. But also on the servers themselves, the first request that comes in will be checked and verified against the runtime database again. So whenever you are out of quota, that dynamic website activation service on the IIS server sitting in the back We'll check for quotas, we'll check the plans and which plan you were on and make sure that your site can be used. If it's not being used for a while, again, it's being removed from the server. So this is the main message I want to give there. If you are deploying something on Windows Azure websites, you're just storing it on storage and the website may not be provisioned unless there are active requests coming in. So the first request coming in will hit the load balancer in Windows Azure, just platform as a service type of load balancer. And that one will randomly select one of the IIS application request routing servers sitting in the back. When that request comes in, the application request routing service will check the runtime database, verify quota, make sure that the website can actually be hosted and can serve requests. Because if you're hosting a lot of images, for example, and you have a high amount of bandwidth being consumed, this thing will make sure that the request is being blocked whenever you're out of quota. If you're not out of quota, the application request routing server will ask the system to provision a web worker, and it's just something in the pool. If you're on a free node, it will just use one of the nodes that are sitting in there. If you're on a shared node as well. Of course, if you're on a reserved node, it will select a dedicated web worker in there. It will forward the request there, and that web worker will also check the runtime database again. So it will make sure that the request coming in can actually or has to be served in that location. The web worker will then connect to the storage controller, and this is just a server sitting in there which is connected to Blob Storage and which will host all the files, but it's just a network-based storage account. And during the demos later on during this talk, you will see that it's actually a file share being used which is mapped on the web server and in which you can explore everything in there. The web worker will just receive the request, and maybe if you're running a WordPress block engine, for example, it will connect to another database, make sure that the request is being handled and a response is generated, and then that response will flow back through the entire chain to the IIS application request routing server and then back to the Azure load balancer. Important thing in this architecture is the Windows Azure load balancer is just a round robin thing. So every request that's coming in will be handled by a different application request routing server. But because that thing adds some headers and some cookies in every request and response, that thing will know on which server your initial request was being handled. So if you scale up and you have a free website, for example, or a shared website, and you scale up to 5 shared instances, every request that comes in for a specific user will always be handled by a specific server in the backend, thanks to this application request routing layer. Which also means that you don't have to worry about things like session state and making sure everything is synchronized across all those things, because it's also always one server that is handling your requests. That's the cold side. What happens is, if you have a hot side, so whenever another request comes in after the first one, you will see that the load balancer again is calling the IIS application request routing load balancer there, the reverse proxy, but it's not checking the hosting database again because it has already been provisioned. This thing knows it has been provisioned. It will simply forward the request to the web worker, which will check storage again, which will connect to whatever other database that's in there, create a response and give it back to the client. So that's a real easy flow there. Nothing special happening there. It's just the first request, which is the difficult one on the platform. If your application is not being used for a while, again, think of it, this will happen. I'm just going to let it play. So this is what happens to your website, right? Of course, provisioning and metering, that was not in the story already. So of course, if you do something and Microsoft wants to bill you, they want to know what you are using in terms of storage, in terms of database, in terms of whatever you are consuming and what the quotas of your current plan are. But they have to provision and meter your website. So whenever you provision something on Windows Azure websites, whenever you create a new website through the portal, you will see that nothing is being done at the IIS level. It's just a storage being created and a database entry being created. It's not launching your website on IIS yet. Again, only when the first request comes in. The metering then, whenever everything is provisioned, the metering of quota of bandwidth and things like that is being done by the web workers. So not by the application request routing servers, but by every single individual web server, which is reporting it back to the runtime database and which the portal and the billing information can be used from. So this is the full story. You will see that, again, you have the load balancer, you have IIS application request routing, And you have two more servers, which are the provisioning and the API frontend, in fact, and the deployment server. So you will see whenever you do a deployment to Windows Azure websites and you use FTP, for example, or you use the web publishing feature, you will see that you're not publishing to the host name of your website. You will see that you're publishing to a completely different host name. That's because you are targeting the deployment server, which is simply writing everything to storage and not consuming IIS in there. So keep in mind that your website will not always be on IIS. In the web worker, there's a lot of website processes running depending on the configuration. So you will see if you're in a free instance, there will be a lot of processes running on every single web worker. The dynamic web activation services are located there, which will check the quotas and check the runtime database and make sure everything is in order and requests can be served. I see a question coming in, namely, how long does it take for a cold site to respond back? Well, it depends on the application. So there are applications in which your application has to start and really the application pool has to be started and a lot of things are being configured. That may take some time, but typical websites respond back quite quickly. But it will depend on the type of application you have running there, just like it would on a traditional web server. So not one single perfect answer there, sorry. The metering then again is being done on the web worker level. So whenever a request comes in, it will measure the amount of requests, the number of bandwidth going out and things like that and report it back to the runtime database, which then can be consumed for billing and things like that. What I think is awesome about the Windows Azure Websites platform is that it is being hosted on Windows Azure Cloud Services and making use of all the things that are in the platform. So I think Windows Azure Websites proves that all the things like Platform as a Service, like SQL Azure or SQL Database on Windows Azure, because I'm old school, I still say SQL Azure. It's running on top of that. It's running on top of blob storage. The drives are on top of blob storage, which means if something fails in the data center, you get everything that you have with Platform as a Service. So whenever some of the web servers in websites should fail, Platform as a Service will make sure everything is being restored. Whenever an update is being done at the system, for example, it's patched Tuesday and Microsoft is running updates on every server running Windows Azure websites, you will see that nothing will happen. Everything will just keep on running because you still have the update domains and the fault domains in there. So every benefit you get from the traditional services, you also have it with Windows Azure websites. It's just that it's not visible to you as an end user of Windows Azure websites. So let's find some proof about everything I've been telling you and let's have a look at the platform and try and find some clues about the things that I just showed you. I'm going to do this using PHP, not because I want to show you how you can run PHP on Windows Azure, but because I want to make sure that PHP is in fact a very simple language in which you can get a lot of information using a very simple statement. So I'm just going to make use of a PHP script there. Going to create a new project and let's call it AzureConf demo. And in that project, I can use the command line tool. So Scott Guthrie already mentioned in the keynote that you have a PowerShell commandlet that you can use to instruct everything you typically do to the portal. But there's also a Node.js version of those tools and you can just invoke them from wherever you want to do. So command line from within your IDE, etc. So let's create a new website. Azure site create, let's give it a name, AzureConf demo. The location of it will be West US. And I want to have Git deployments. Let's see if that command is correct. I'll give you a quick view of the command. So just Azure site create, and let's go there. And I'm going to run this, and it will take a while because it's provisioning a new website on Windows Azure, and we have some time for some questions in there. So, what happens to my in-memory stuff, say static variables, when the app is unloaded? Is it as if an app pool reset happens? Yes, it will be like that. So whenever you have a website running on Windows Azure and the application pool is being recycled or your website is being taken down from the IIS server, it's exactly the same principle like an application pool reset. So yes, that will be the same thing. What happens with multiple shared instances when content is uploaded via HTTP, as in the case with WordPress? That's a good question. So since you have the shared folder in which websites are running, whenever you upload something there, say with WordPress you have a file upload coming in there, Every server will be sharing that same network attached to Drive within the Windows Azure network, and every server will simply write their content to the same location in start. So whenever you do a file upload, for example, it will just end up there, and every server will have immediately access to that one file in there. So I hope that answers your question, Jason. So I was creating a new website command line. I have to give my username there, and it will create the websites. And I can immediately configure my Git root. So let's add that one there. And let's add a new file as well. So I'm going to create a new PHP file. Call it index.php because that will be the first file that is being served by the server. Going to add it to my Git, remove some of the code, and use one very simple statement, namely PHP info. Again, I told you PHP is a very simple language to do things like this. This thing will give me an entire overview of everything on the server, as we will see in a minute. So I'm going to commit this stuff to the server. Let's say initial commit. I'm going to disable those things, and I'm going to commit and push using the Azure origin and push. And what you will see in the portal is that that website is created, so the Azure Conf demo. And under deployments, you will also see that the deployment should be running there, that I've just triggered from within my IDE. So I still have to give my passwords, apparently. And the push failed. I think I used the wrong password there. So let's do that one more time. Let's push this stuff to Windows Azure using the master branch. I have to give the password, and I think I just did a small typo there. Let's try it one more time. It's pushing. It's pushing, and we see our website is deploying. So I've just deployed my websites. And if I now go to the URL, we should be seeing all the information that is available in the environments. So this is the PHP information page, and you will see a lot of things there. So for example, I'm going to search for it. The computer name is RD something something. If you deploy a cloud service, you will notice that the computer name is actually a similar name. So all the names of the hosts in Windows Azure start with RD. So this may be an indication that it's running on top of a cloud service. We also see the number of processors is 8. So even though I'm on a free website, I'm in the free tier of Windows Azure websites, apparently the server on which my site is hosted has 8 CPU cores in there. But there's more information. Let's run through all the variables there. And we can find things like where the server home is. So this is the virtual directory in which IIS will check where my site is hosted and where all the files are. And it will host a website from that directory. Now keep in mind this directory, the virtual directory 0, because in a later demo, we will actually find proof that this thing is hosted on a network share in there. There's more things in here. So for example, where is the one? There it is. The HTTP X forwarded 4. This is a HTTP header which is being added by IIS application request routing. So my IP here locally within the Channel 9 studios is this 131 IP address you see in the value. And application request routing is simply adding that header and sending it off to the server running the website. You also find things related to application request routing. So the log ID, for example, is being used to correlate all the requests and the responses coming in and out of the load balancer in there. So there's actually quite a lot of proof simply in the environment of the application in there. But let's move on and do something else. If you need more proof, so this was a meager proof. There was some proof in there that application request routing was being used. There was some proof in there that cloud services were being used. But if you really want more proof, or you want to host your own version of Windows Azure websites, there's actually a product named Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. You can install it on your own web farm, and you can simply run websites on your own data center. And if you look at that, you will see that you have to provision a provisioning server, you have to deploy a deployment server, you have to deploy whatever is in there. I see a question coming in, is there a shared memory cache available? I'm not sure, and I'm not sure what has been announced and what not, but I think a logical step may be that in the future something like that will be available. So I'm not going to say yes there, I'm not going to say no there, but perhaps. Okay, let's talk about Project Kudu. Project Kudu is the main engine behind Windows Azure websites. So if you go to GitHub and you go to project/kudu, you will find that the tagline there is the engine behind Git deployments on Windows Azure. So actually, the entirety of Windows Azure website is open sourced. And I think a couple of weeks ago, even the first community contributed commit pull request has been pulled in into this project, and it's live today on Windows Azure website. So it's really open source. Don't think everything will make it into the final product, but you see there's some community working there. Kudu provides Git deployments. It provides all the build logic. So whenever you deploy something using Git to Windows Azure websites and you see the build process going on, that is something which is handled by Project Kudu. It also provides the sandboxing. So you might have noticed already, or maybe not, that some things are not being made available. So if you log into the file system and you want to get a list of all the processes in there, for example, you will not get back the list of all processes running on the server, but only your processes. So there's a sandbox in action, and not everything is working there. And of course, it provides the hosting. Interesting thing is Kudu runs in the same application pool as your website. So whenever you do a deployment and you do a Git deployment and the build is being created, that thing actually runs on top of IIS within the same application pool there. So if you're using Git deployments, it's actually spinning up a new server on IIS. So let's give you a quick demo about Project Kudu, and you will notice some similarities. So I've downloaded Project Kudu and opened it in my Visual Studio, and you will see that, well, it contains a lot of projects. And you will find most things like unit tests in there, but you will also find things like the web interface and also the Kudu services projects. If you look in there, all the things like I want to create a website on Windows Azure, I want to deploy something, I want to reset my deployment credentials and things like that are in that API. So if for some reason you want to extend this and you want to host Kudu yourself, you can simply use all the Node.js tools to communicate with Project Kudu, but add your own features in there if needed. So let's run this thing. And you will see that by default, we get a very simple dashboard without any applications. But let's do something about that and create an application. I'm going to name it, let's say, Kudu Demo. And we can create the application. It's not the same UI as Windows Azure websites, but you will see that the same principles are there. So the first thing I get here is a Git URL, which I can use to push data or push new projects to my locally hosted Kudu. So let's do that. I think I have something in there. I've created a simple page containing a simple header saying AzureConf 2013. I can commit it to my local Git repository. I can add a new remote saying Kudu and give it the URL. And I can then Git push Kudu master, and it will push everything to my local Kudu installation. Now you notice I didn't have to log in here. The main reason for that is that Kudu is not taking care of any authentication there. It's the application pool that you are hosted in that will handle the authentication. So on Windows Azure websites, it's the application pool requiring you to log in, and it's not Project Kudu which is running the Git build. But anyway, we've deployed to the application, and if we now go to the application URL, we should be seeing the page we just committed using Git. Let's also have a look at the deployments. On Windows Azure, you will see this deployments tab. And again, in Kudu, you also see this deployments tab. You see that it was successful, and I can view the log. And it also looks pretty similar to what you see in Windows Azure websites. So you see that a deployment script is being generated, and all the logging information is there. And you see that you can run deployment commands, and Kudu Sync is being triggered, and stuff is being copied to the server running this website. Now, an interesting thing here is these two guys. Welcome to the dark side. We have cookies. That's something I added yesterday evening to my local Kudu build. And we will see later during the demos at the end of this talk that there's quite some interesting stuff you can do with Kudu on Windows Azure websites. So keep in mind, I can customize the build process. Here I just added some log entries, but maybe you can do something else. And you can do some stuff with this on Windows Azure, but more on that later on. I sound like a commercial guy. So I also have the configuration tab there, and you can see that the branch you want to deploy, the thing you have in Windows Azure websites, is in there as well. You see that you can add additional MSBuild command line arguments. That's something which is not available in Windows Azure websites, but you see in Kudu it's available. Who knows, maybe it will somehow bleed into the Windows Azure websites deployments as well. You also see all the custom properties that are being given to MS Build and given to your website, and you can add your own custom properties as well, just like you can do on Windows Azure websites. And then in Trace, you can see all the requests coming in, you can see all the deployments coming in, and etc. So you can see all of those things. Now, one very interesting thing is if we go to our dashboard, you see that we have two URLs there. We have the application URL, but we also have the service URL. And the service URL is a thing where you are pushing your Git deployments to. So you see the service URL is actually the same as the Git URL, except that, of course, the Git repository name is being added. But that's the service to which you are posting your data. Fun thing is, if I open this thing, you see that you have a diagnostics dump, you see that you have a diagnostics log, and you have the runtime environment containing all the environment variables that we just have seen in using our PHP scripts. Fun thing is, this page is also available on Windows Azure websites. So if we go to the portal, let's find the portal there. If we go to our previous website and we simply add SCM for source code management in there, and we navigate to that URL, it will ask us to authenticate because Windows Azure website doesn't want to throw all your environment variables on the streets. You have to log in. So let's do that. And you see that I typically have to switch between AZERTY and QWERTY keyboards. And you will see that's the exact same page, except it's a different build number, of course, but you can still see the runtime environment you have on Windows Azure websites. You see that I'm using local Git for deployments. You see that there's a connection string being generated and things like that. So if you populate that connection string, you will find it here as well. So that's why you probably don't want this thing out on the streets without any authentication. So that's Kudu. And you see a lot of similarities with Windows Azure websites there. Now let's do some Kudu Kung Fu and see what's possible when making use of all the features that are inside Kudu. So let's start there and do something with application log streaming. That's a very interesting one. If we go to the portal, and I've created a website there called AzureConf Logging, you will see that you can simply go there and nothing fancy is happening. It's just showing you a H1 header saying logging. Now what's happening under the covers is this thing. Let's find it there. Logging. What's happening is whenever you load the page, I'm just writing some stuff to the console trace. So I have a trace.writeLine and a trace.traceInformation. Nothing is happening. This thing is not being written anywhere, except if I enable it through the portal. So if I go to the Windows Azure Websites portal, go to the Configure tab, you will find the Application Diagnostics tab there. So you can enable Application Diagnostics and specify the logging level you want to have. So for example, verbose. Whenever you enable this, it will be enabled for the next 12 hours, unless of course you disable it manually. But the interesting thing is that we can now hook into the diagnostics trace and find everything that is generated by our code in there without doing any modification, just simply write to diagnostics trace. Let's have a look at that. I'm just going to copy the name of the website there. And if I say Azure site log tail for that website, you will see that it's connecting to Windows Azure and it will check that whatever log is being generated there. So it's enumerating the sites and making sure, I think I did a wrong thing there. It's Azure sites log. Let's have a look at the information there. Azure site log tail and then the name of the site. So let's do that again. AzureConf logging. It should be working, but in case it's not, let's just move on. It's not working apparently. The main reason is why it's not working. The thing that would happen if I got this to work and I had the command right, and I actually copied it somewhere, so let's give it one more go. What will happen is it will connect to the Windows Azure log streaming service on Windows Azure websites and then retrieve all the information that is being logged by the website. So whenever something happens on the website, whenever you write something to the diagnostics log, this thing will fetch all that data in a live fashion. So it's just like you get a log stream, and whenever something is being added, you will immediately see it on this log tail. So apparently it didn't work. So let's move on to the next demo. But it's actually a quite cool feature, of course, if it works, in which you can even define the logging level. So if you're only interested in errors, you can just specify it through the portal and see whatever is going on or not going on there. Okay, the log streaming by default will give you the log tail of just simply the one site that you are working with. And I think I found the error here. I think it's just Azure log tail. So I'm going to try it one more time. Should be site log tail. No, okay. So you can simply fetch the tail, and by default, it will simply fetch all the information being written to the diagnostics trace. You can, of course, specify which log you want to listen to. So, for example, if you just want the HTTP log and see all the requests coming in, you can add a parameter there and say, I just want the HTTP logging there. There's also some settings you can do through the portal. So, saying, for example, where the log files should be written to, what's the max sizes of the log files, and whenever you want to have some rolling size updates to make sure that the size is not too big inside that thing. So, that's for logging there. One thing is, how does this work? What do I have to configure in my website? Well, let me show you. You don't have to configure a thing. I'm just using diagnostics trace, and the only thing I enabled is the default web page trace listener you have in ASP.NET. So no rocket science, no custom listeners there, just a simple web page trace listener that you can use. So let's move back to our presentation. Another very cool thing is that you can manage settings and secrets through the portal. So whenever you have settings in your application, you can do this through the portal. So I'm going to give you a quick sample there. I have my config and secrets project there, and I've added a very simple interface there. I'm just showing whatever is being provided by the settings, and in source code, it looks like this. I'm just getting an app setting, namely my key from the app settings, and I'm also getting the same key from the environment variable. If I open this website in the portal, so let's do that, Azure Conf settings, and I want to go to the website there, which is this one, you will see that I'm getting information from the settings, namely the settings value is Azure Conf. Now you've seen in the source code that I'm doing this in two manners, so I'm using the app settings approach there, but also the environment variable approach. The reason why both of them works is that Windows Azure websites can run multiple languages like PHP, like Node.js, and so on. So they don't have the app settings concept you have in .NET, and that's why all these settings are also being written to the environment variables. Where do I configure this? Well, simply through the portal, go to the Configure tab, and we can specify the setting. So my key is in there, and it's saying Azure Conf. Let's make it Azure Conf 2013 and save it. And you will see that my page will be updated. So it's updating, and if I now refresh, the value should be changed. It's refreshing. So you see Azure Conf 2013. Now what's interesting is, if I go to my website using FTP and I open a connection to my site, let's go in there and go into our site. Let's go into the www root, and let's download our webconfig file. If I open this one locally, not using that thing, let's just go to ctemp. Where is my ctemp? If I open this thing locally, you will see that this setting is not in there. So everything I configure through the portal is being injected into the process running on Windows Azure websites, but not written into my configuration file, which is on that project, which is interesting. Because using this approach, I can have secrets embedded in the configuration. I can simply specify things like certificates, like passphrases and things and so on through the portal, through the configuration there, and then make use of that in my application without touching the web config and without my developers seeing it in the web config. So that's a very interesting thing to store either configuration settings or things like secrets and so on. Okay, cool. There's some other things you can do. Staging and production. So if you deploy a website to Windows Azure websites, you will see that you can add different branches you want to deploy. So for example, if I create a new website, let's do a quick create there, or a custom create, let's say Azure Conf staging, and we create it in the West US, and we want to publish from source control. I can select I want to publish from Bitbucket, for example. Click Next. I can select my repository. I want to log in using Google. There we go. I can select my repository, which is this one, and I can specify the branch to deploy. So if I want to deploy my production environment, maybe that's in my default branch. If I want to deploy my staging environment, in this demo I've put it in the staging branch, and I can simply select that one and it will deploy only the staging version. So if we look at the sources of this thing, this is the repository I have on Bitbucket. I have my default branch containing my production environment, and I have a staging branch, which is the one that I'm deploying right now. The interesting part of this approach, where you just specify the branch you want to use on Windows Azure websites, is that you can just deploy it, and that you can have staging and production, but also on different environments. So unlike with Platform as a Service, where you have this gibberish URL that you can use for staging, in websites you can simply create your own URL, optionally make it a free, shared, or production or reserved instance, and then host your staging environment on one of those. So maybe you want to have your production environment on a reserved instance with, I don't know, maybe 10 instances or something like that, and you're staging on a free tier. You can do that using Windows Azure websites using this approach. So if we now go to our website, this website should be live and we should be seeing the staging So the staging website, which simply adds this thing in the text. Okay, let's have a look at some other things. Multi-tier application. Imagine you have a website calling into an API and you want to deploy both of them. How would you go about that in Windows Azure websites? I'll give you an example. I have a very simple website here, which is called Multi-tier, which has a web project and a web API project. What will happen if I deploy this website to Windows Azure websites? Well, since this one is the first in my solution file, my website will be deployed and not my web API. So how can I go about deploying the web API instead? Well, there's some tricks you can do, and those are actually explained on the Kudu website as well. I can simply open my solution folder there. So I can open my folder in File Explorer, go to the multi-tier location, and in there, I think I have a console in there as well. I can simply notepad into a .deployment file. So this .deployment file, which wasn't in there yet, is a file in which I can specify some things. So for example, I can add some configuration there and say that the project I want to deploy is my multi-tier.webapi/multi-tier.webapi.cs project. If I now push this using Git, what will happen is Windows Azure websites will not deploy the website, but it will deploy the web API to my project, which is an interesting thing you can do. Not going to show you because I'm running out of time and there's some really cool stuff coming up. But remember, you can specify the project in there that you want to deploy. One remark there. It's either the web API or the website. Using this approach, you cannot specify which one you want to deploy on a different website. So if you have the web API in that configuration file and you deploy it to two websites, it will be twice the web API that you have deployed. So if you want to deploy the web API and the website into a different website on Windows Azure websites, you can do so using build customization. And that's one of the next things I want to show you. If you want to customize the build process, you can have a look at the Project Kudu website again, and you will find that in that .deployment file, you can not only specify the project equals whatever command you want to execute, but also the commands that you want to execute. And that command can be a batch file, it can be bash. So if you're in the Linux world and you want to write a bash script for doing that, you can do so. If you want to write a JavaScript file to deploy everything in there, you can do so as well. If you want to do PHP, you can do so as well. So it's really easy to customize your build in there and just give it whatever command you want to run during the build. So let's do a quick demo there. And I'm going to skip this demo because I have a unit testing demo coming up which combines all of those things. But if you want to customize the deployment, basically what you will see is that you get a simple batch file, for example, in which you have access to all the environment variables provided by the Windows Azure website's runtime, but also the ones that you are providing through the portal. So in the previous example where I added this configuration variable through the portal, that same variable will be available in the build script that you are creating. So if for some reason you need a secret in there, you can simply add it to the configuration there and you have it available in the build script that you can use. There's some variables in there, the deployment source, which contains, of course, where the files are located that you want to deploy, the deployment target, where the files should go in order to be deployed, a temporary path, you will find the webroot path, so if you want to do something on the live website, you can do so using the webroot path variable, MSBuild is in there, and of course, all the things that you have through the management portal. So let's give you a quick demo on how these scripts look. I can generate those myself, but I can also use the command line tools to generate them for me. So for example, I can say Azure Site Deployment Script and make it a basic script. This thing will add two files to my project. Again, the .deployment file containing a command. So you see that during the deployment, I want to run the deploy.cmd command on the build server and my command itself. And you will see there are several stages in there. It will load some prerequisites. It will make sure that Node.js is there because Kudu uses Node.js to trigger the build and things like that. So it's making sure Node.js is installed on the build server there. It's specifying all the variables and making sure every path variable and every variable you can use during the build is available. And it will make sure that the Kudu sync command is being loaded. Kudu Sync is a tool that it will be used automatically to synchronize the contents from your build to the live web server. And it will only copy the files that have been modified. So the deployment will go faster using Kudu Sync. But if you want to customize the build and just use Xcopy to copy everything between both locations, you can do so as well, no problem. Then you will find the deployments in which MSBuild should be called. Well, not in this case because it's a basic website deployment. And it will sync all the contents to the live server. If something goes wrong, we go to the error, we give it an error level, which will be used by the portal to display a notification there, and we finish our build. Now I've created another one, which is, where is it? This one. I've created another one in which I have a deploy.cmd file, which will run unit tests, which is an interesting thing. So you see, the approach is the same. I'm having all the prerequisites that are in there by default, but I've added some things in there. If the Galio command is not being found, and Galio is an open source test runner for NUnit, for XUnit, and basically every unit test framework out there, I will download an unzip tool from some URL. I will also download Galio. I will extract Galio. And later on during the build process, after I've run the build, I will run my unit tests. You see, by adding this error level thing there, whenever the unit tests fail, my deployment will also fail. So I'm not able to deploy my website if my unit tests are not passing. So let's commit this thing to Windows Azure websites. I've already added both files in there, but I haven't committed them before. So you see I have some new files in there. So let's git push origin master. It's not called origin in this one, it's called Azure. I'm pushing to git, and you will see that after entering my password, all the steps described in this build script are also being shown in the build log here. So you will see that everything is up to date. Should add those files. So git commit minus a minus m added unit tests. Let's push to Azure. Let's give it the password again. And you will see that now things are happening. It's copying the files using Git to Windows Azure. And you see that everything in my build script is happening. So it's making sure Kudu Sync is installed. You see that in the build log, I'm also installing Kudu Sync. So those things are happening right now. It's installing Kudu Sync. It will take a while. And once that is done, you will see that all the other things in my build script are being executed as well. So once Kudu Sync is installed, let's hope that doesn't take too long. We'll just wait for it a couple of seconds. It does take a while. You will see that things are happening. So in here, you see that, let's grab that screen. You see that I'm downloading this unzip tool. So in my build script, I defined that an unzip tool should be downloaded. Well, it's doing that right here. It's also downloading Galio. It's extracting Galio apparently right now. It's handling the .NET web application deployment, so creating a build of my project. And whenever that is finished, it will trigger the unit test runner. So it's copying all files to a temporary location right now, and Galio is being run. So you see that I'm running my unit tests during the build process there. Finished successfully, deployment successful. If I go to the portal, if I find it, if I go to the portal and go to my unit test project, which is this one, and I go to deployments, you will also see all those steps in the build login there. So let's make a failing unit test in our project. Let's change something. And for example, assert that false equals true. Let's commit that stuff to Windows Azure. Failing tests. Git push Azure master. I made a typo there. Sounds like lead speak, no? So push to Azure. I'm going to push. I'm going to provide the password again. Now you will see that the build this time is different. Before it was downloading Galio, it was downloading the unzip tool. You will see during this build that my zip tool is already available on the server. It's already downloaded Galio as well, so it's not downloading it again. And you will see that, well, basically it's skipping those steps. Main reason for that, again, is that all websites are being hosted on one central file storage location and that we can use that in our builds as well. So it's installing Kudu. Apparently the installation for Kudu is not that intelligent and installs it every time, which may be a good thing because probably you want to have the latest version of Kudu Sync anyway. So I'm running unit tests now. You see that the tests are failing and that my build has failed. Changes have been committed to the repository, but it has not been deployed. So if you want to safeguard your deployments using unit tests, send me an email. I'll send you the script. In fact, it's on my blog as well. So if you need it, if you want to run unit tests during your build, this is the way to go there. So that's a very slow slide. Why would you want to customize the builds? Well, if you want to add unit tests there, this is the way to go. What can you do during a build? Basically run any command line tool that you want. MSBuild, NuGet, curl, PHP, Node, whatever you want to do there, you can do it in the build script. Which may be interesting. Remember the multi-tier scenario where we specified the project that should be deployed? Well, if we just switch based on a configuration value in the portal, which is exposed as an environment variable in the build script, we can deploy our web API to one server and our web sites to another website in there. So that's the way you can handle this this thing. And of course, unit tests, you can do such things. I get a question there. If I run websites in reserved mode, is it possible to specify a different server or must all run the same default server? Well, what will happen if you go to reserved modes is that all your websites in the same subscription will always be on the same server, or if you have multiple specified, on the same set of servers. So if you want to run them on a really different server, you have to have multiple subscriptions currently if you want to do that. Another question, are the slides for download? Yes, they will be on the website afterwards, I think. And I think that's valid for every talk you see today. What if you want more? What if you want more things than just the build customization and things like that? Well, there's a REST API. We've seen Kudu. We've seen the fact that you can see all the environment variables there. You can use that REST API to add your own APIs there, or maybe reset your deployment credentials and things like that. There's Dropbox support, and if you want to run an entirely different language, so a C++ application, for example, you can add your own custom handlers in websites as well. You can just do it through the portal, specify the .exe file you want to use as the host for the application, and it will work. But if you really, really, really need more, you can do something really cool. And it's Inception-like. You can host Kudu on Azure websites, which is Kudu. So Kudu in Kudu. And the thing you see on screen, that was my reaction when I heard this first, but it actually makes sense to do. So if you want to run Kudu on Windows Azure websites, well, you can just customize your own Kudu installation. And for example, I added a Welcome to the Dark Side logging in there. Maybe if you want to run unit tests and you don't want to write a custom build script, you can maybe hack it into Kudu. deploy your own Kudu service and then use that one, which will always run unit tests, no matter what the deployment script tells you to do. The way to do this is customize Kudu, build it, use the Kudu service folder, copy it using FTP to your website, switch the use private Kudu variable to one, and it will work. One side note there, it's fun to do, it's really fun to experiment with, but you're on your own. It's an unsupported territory, support will not help you if you do this, but there's a lot of options available if you deploy your own Kudu version there. Good question may be, does this run on all my websites? No, it's per website. So if you want to use a custom version of Kudu on every website you have to take these steps on every website. So upload it using FTP and change the configuration value there. So in conclusion, Windows Azure websites are high density. The architecture is really built about making your website highly available, but also have as many websites on as few servers as possible. They're hosted on cloud services and SQL Azure and everything that's in there. And that makes the websites more reliable. And Kudu is really our best friend. Everything you see in Kudu will eventually probably ship to Windows Azure websites. So for example, the log streaming, which didn't work during the demo, that's been in Kudu for, I think, a couple of weeks now. And it's only been deployed on Azure websites last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago. We can have settings and secrets through the portal, which are not being added to our web config. So we can have real secrets in there that our developers don't get access to. We can have multiple environments like staging and production based on the branch name. We can have multiple tiers. We can customize this using the .deployment file in which we specify the project we want to deploy. We can customize our build as well. So really create a custom build using a batch script or a bash script. We can run unit tests and we can do Kudu in Kudu. If you have any more questions, feel free to reach out and I will try and answer them. If you're interested in Kudu, there's lots more on the Kudu project on GitHub. So for example, if you want to shell into a remote server on websites, you can do so as well using Kudu. But with that, I thank you for being here. I thank you for staying awake because it's a different time zone everywhere. And thank you for watching this presentation. Thanks.